On the first Easter morning, Peter wakes from a dead sleep to the familiar voice of Mary Magdalene sharing the shocking news that Jesus's body was stolen. Peter runs to the tomb with the other disciple whom Jesus loved and finds the tomb empty with only the linen wrappings left behind. Peter returned home. Could it be true? Had Jesus actually risen from the dead? What would Peter say when he saw him? I imagine that Peter went home and crawled back in bed. As he closed his eyes, all he could see were flashes of fire in the courtyard that night. He heard himself saying, "I am not. I am not. I am not." He heard the sound of the cock crowing, piercing his soul over and over again. He couldn't take it back. The shame had crippled him. He'd managed to make it to dinner with the other disciples that night, and Jesus appeared, saying, "Peace be with you." Peace? How would he ever find peace again? Jesus breathed on them, telling them to receive his spirit. Could Peter receive Jesus' spirit after all that he had done? A week later, Jesus appeared again, saying, "Peace be with you." And Jesus allowed Thomas to touch his hands and his sides to assuage any doubt that it was not him. Even after two post-resurrection encounters with Jesus, Peter was slogging through each day in shock. He was holding deep pain and trauma in his body. He still felt that deep pain in the gut that comes when you're haunted by the great wrong you've done to someone you love. You might not have noticed it just from looking at him, but he was going through the motions. Maybe being out on the water would make him feel like himself again. So he told the other disciples that he was going fishing, and they decided to join him. All night long, they threw out the net, but they caught nothing. And a man stood on the shore and yelled out, "You aren't catching anything, are you?" And they answered, "Nope, not one." And he said, "Cast to the right of the boat." And they did what he said, and they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish. And they started to feel like they've been in this scene before. The disciple whom Jesus loved figured it out first and yelled, "It's the Lord!" And when Peter heard it was Jesus, he goes completely overboard, figuratively and literally, as he jumps into the sea. And with the water dripping from his face, you can't tell water from tears. Peter joined Jesus on the shore, and the other disciples joined them after they finally got that net inside the boat. Jesus had built a charcoal fire and prepared a meal of fish and bread. And Jesus tells the disciples to bring some more fish in from their haul, and Peter's the first to listen as he goes aboard to fetch the fish. Then Jesus says, "Come and have breakfast." And as Peter eats with Jesus around the fire, he's taken back to the time Jesus fed the crowd of 5,000 with just the 5 loaves and the 2 fish that belonged to a generous little boy. But the most pressing image is that fire in the courtyard. His denial is as pungent as the smoke. Could Peter's shame be transformed? This meal is starting to restore him. Jesus is offering him grace by feeding him breakfast on the shore. After the meal, Jesus called out to Peter, calling him Simon, son of John. He had pulled out Peter's full birth name, so you know that Jesus really means business. But perhaps, too, he called him out with his birth name to let him know it was actually his choice whether or not he lived into this identity of Cephas, Peter, the rock of the church. He could go back to just being Simon, son of John, or he could own his role as Peter. So Jesus calls out three times, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And three times Peter answers him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. But by not reading this in Greek, we miss something. The first time Jesus asks Peter if he loves him, Jesus uses the word agape. He asks, do you agape me? But Peter answers with a different Greek word for love, philia. He says, yes, I philia you. Agape connotes an all-encompassing love, an unconditional love, a love that will sacrifice everything. But filio connotes the familiar love between friends. So it was as if Jesus was saying, do you love me more than life itself? And Peter kept answering, I love you like a friend. It's as if Peter knows he hasn't developed agape love yet, and Jesus knows it too. And when Jesus asks for the third time, he decides to meet Peter where he is. And so he says, Peter, do you love me like a friend? This made Peter sad. But it was the truth. And he replied, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you like a friend. Even in light of the resurrection, Peter still had a wandering heart. Even as he sought to hand his heart over to Jesus, he still had a lot to learn about fidelity. As Stephen J. Benn says, Peter responds more cautiously this time, more humbly aware of his vulnerability and limitations. At long last, Peter has learned that he cannot rely on his own strength and willpower to follow Jesus. And yet, each of his affirmations of love offsets his earlier rejections, and he experiences the healing and reconciling presence of the risen Lord. Though Jesus knows Peter hasn't quite developed agape love yet, he still responds the same way three times. Okay, well, feed my lambs, shepherd my sheep, feed my sheep. And Jesus restores Simon, son of John, to Peter, the rock of the church, and calls on him to shepherd this new movement of Jesus' followers. The love that Peter has will be enough. It will grow. As the community John wrote to knew, Peter's love would end up being a love that loved Jesus more than life itself, as Peter's life would also end in death on a cross. Peter's shame was transformed, and he became a faithful follower. As Ben says, experience shows that those who are forgiven the most are able to love the most. Peter was able to love with fidelity and commitment because he had failed and been forgiven. Stripped of his vain pride and self-reliance, Peter was now able to love Jesus with self-sacrificing love. He was able to be the rock, the fisherman, the shepherd of the church that Jesus called him to be. Jesus gave Peter his heart, and in return, Peter was able to give him his. And that day on the shore, Peter too was resurrected from the dead. In George Herbert's poem, "Love Bade Me Welcome," I see Peter's story. I see Jesus bidding Peter and Peter holding back, and perhaps you can see yourself too. Jesus bidding you welcome, and you drawing back. Herbert writes, "Love bade me welcome, yet my soul drew back. Guilty of dust and sin, but quick-eyed love, observing me grow slack from my first entrance in, drew nearer to me, sweetly questioning if I lacked anything. A guest, I answered, worthy to be here. Love said, you shall be he. I, the unkind, ungrateful, ah, my dear, I cannot look on thee. Love took my hand and smiling did reply, who made the eyes but I? Truth, Lord, but I have marred them. Let my shame go where it doth deserve. And know you not, says love, who bore the blame? My dear, then I will serve. You must sit down, says love, and taste my meat. So I did sit and eat." Peter finally accepted the bidding that day. He sat down and ate, and he was transformed. He was resurrected. We are like Peter, because we too have wandering hearts, even in the light of the resurrection. It's dangerous to say, "Here's my heart, Lord. Take and seal it." How can we possibly give Jesus our hearts? How can we possibly love Jesus more than life itself, more than our children, our family, our friends? Well, maybe we can love him like a friend, sure. But more than life itself? Like Peter, we have to decide if we will respond only to our birth names or if we will live into our calling from Jesus. Will we love him more than life itself? We are only able to give Jesus our hearts and live the good news of the resurrection if we transform our pain like Peter did. We all carry around pain in one form or another. We all have something that haunts us when we close our eyes, something we've done to hurt someone we love, something someone has done to hurt us, something that has turned our lives upside down. We all struggle with the ways that we have failed to live as the beloved children of God that we were created to be. But even though our souls draw back, we have to keep letting love do the bidding. Even when it's painful to look, we must let love take us by the hand and lock eyes with it. Even when we feel like we don't deserve it, we must sit down and taste love's meat. As Richard Rohr says, if we do not transform our pain, we will most assuredly transmit it. Usually to those closest to us, our family, our neighbors, our coworkers, and invariably the most vulnerable. Most of us are relay stations. Only a minority are transformers. People who actually change the electrical charge that passes through us. So on this Easter Sunday morning, we are invited to transform our pain, to heal our wounds, and to learn to love Jesus more than life itself. We are invited to be in that minority of people who actually change the electrical charge that passes through us by being utterly transformed. Each of us can come to know, as Jan Richardson says, the heart that has held you always, even when you could not hear its beating, even when you could not bear its love. As we breathe deep and receive that love, we figure out how to love Jesus more than life itself. And then we learn that beautiful task of tending Jesus's sheep. And just like wounds, we heal from the inside out. And as we heal and transform our pain, we too will be resurrected, and we will be able to create beloved community. We too, like Peter, will then be able to change the world. So Jesus asks you and me, do you love me? And we each respond, yes, Lord. I love you as much as I know how. Here's my heart. Take and seal it. And by some miracle, we too are transformed and resurrected. For Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. Amen.